This is Anu Oluwapo Aziz here, and this is my official podcast, Everything to Say, More to Know. And today we'll be talking about the topic of conventional beauty and body dysmorphia. And the way in which I will be sectioning off this topic is by explaining the definition of conventional beauty, insecurity, body dysmorphia itself, social media's impact in how we view our bodies, and also how to love ourselves. I feel like all of these elements will perfectly illustrate insecurity at its core and why a lot of us feel very uncomfortable with accepting our bodies as it came, you know, accepting ourselves as we are, despite the projections of what we should change or what we should accept about our natural selves. So let's talk about the definition of conventional beauty, because I find that social media and a lot of platforms kind of have skewed the origins of where it came from and the reason being of why we still use it today. And it's not about European beauty or European standards, but rather the symmetry and averageness of what a person's face looks like. And these indicators of symmetry has been used by our ancestors to pick off who is a good suitor for procreation. That's literally the root of conventional beauty. Conventional beauty has also been used to figure out modes of survival within the wilderness amongst our ancestors. And they would see within their environment what fruits and environments can they stay in based on the way plants looked or the way the environment around them was put together. Because when it comes to seeing things evenly, the golden ratio on this planet is that there's a certain amount of leaves, a certain amount of branches, a certain amount of patterns that should be within certain plants, certain environments, etc., etc. So we can use those understandings to see whether an environment is safe to be in or whether we should leave. And our ancestors would know what different types of fruits, plants, and stuff they should be eating and what environments they should be staying in because of symmetry, because of the golden ratio. And the golden ratio can also be applied to how we see people's faces, because it is used ultimately to see from a woman's perspective, or should I just say a female's perspective, that this person is good enough to be a protector and provider for my children. And from a male's perspective, this woman is good enough to bear my children. Obviously, this is more so history-wise than it is current day. And ultimately, that's where conventional beauty stems from. It stems from understanding the genetics and biological need to pick people whom look healthy, whom are a representation of vital health, and basically another reason to prolong their lives. Because when people do procreate, the objective is to have healthy babies. And even if someone doesn't decide to have babies, their objective is to be with somebody whom can prolong their life in a healthy way. Healthy relationships, healthy people, all go hand in hand. And another interesting point that I would like to make is that beauty standards are different within each culture. They are not a monolith of any sorts. That's why when we talk about conventional beauty, it should be only be talked about through the averageness of proportions of someone's face and how healthy a person looks. That's the only true indication of recognizing beauty within each culture, because it's about who has the most average looking face and the reasons why these people have the most average looking faces. And it's usually based on the pattern, the golden ratio of proportions in which a person's face is supposed to look within that culture. So, in turn, what I'm trying to say in simple English is symmetry matters when it comes to understanding the health of how someone is internally, but it's not an indicator of what true beauty is in any way. Just a mode of why we pick certain people for certain reasons. Like, that's our biological drive to pick people and why we choose people for those reasons. It doesn't necessarily mean that person is beautiful. It just means that internally we tend to pick certain types of looks for trying to expand our life, expand our seeds, expand everything, basically. That's what humans kind of ultimately are here for. We're here to keep growing and growing and growing and growing, and hoping that the next generation of people are going to be just as healthy as us, or even more healthy than we were. I simply cannot move on forward to speak about body dysmorphia without addressing the root of it, which is insecurity. Insecurity means the lack of certainty, confidence, and even anxiety about oneself. And insecurity sounds like an internal issue, which it is, but it doesn't start off as an internal issue. It starts off as people telling us about ourselves, telling us the things that they think are wrong about us. And it is ultimately internalized within us and is projected as an issue within ourselves, but rather the actual truth of it all is we started out not having any negative ideas or opinions about ourselves. It is those whom we have surrounded ourselves with, which is family, friends, people that have built up our characters, usually are also the people that tell us things that have nothing to do with us, but feels like it has everything to do with us. That's where insecurity comes from. Moving on forward to body dysmorphia. Before I even get started, I want to make some pointers to people. One, this is not a place for you to diagnose yourself as anything, but rather use this as a form of information and notes to improve how you view yourself and to improve your overall view of health, view of beauty, and view of what you must do to accept yourself. Because it's not about changing your body or changing your appearance, rather understanding the root of why you want to do that. Because an outer fix for an internal problem just magnifies the internal problem. Another point I want to make is we all exist on a spectrum on all forms of everything on this planet, which means you could be high on one spectrum, which is you could be extremely good at writing, but be horrible at math. Your skill level is based on the spectrum. Just like when it comes to mental health issues, we all exist on a spectrum. Some of us need more help in one area, and some of us are better off just doing shit on our own. That's just the reality of how it works. But when it comes to our opinions about our bodies, we need to understand that just the fact that we can have an opinion about our body just means we're all capable of having negative opinions about our body, which is insecurity. Body dysmorphia at its root core is an obsession and developed anxiety about defects or flaws within a person's appearance. This can mean anything for anybody. Anything within someone's physical earthly body that makes them much more insecure about themselves can be from acne to complexion, body size, body type, genitals, hair, the way your legs look in something. It could be anything about our bodies that can trigger body dysmorphia, which is just an exasperation of the flaw that we perceive in ourselves. When it comes to even talking about body dysmorphia, it's different for many different people for many different reasons, which is why a generalization when it comes to the genders doesn't really make sense, because our identities are not in any way correlated to our assignment of our genitals. So when I'm talking about the genders of man and woman, I want to illustrate that I'm talking about the perceived identity of the person, whether they have a male or female reproductive system, and also whether that person is non-binary and whether they have that reproductive system or not. So it's mainly based on your identity of what you are and also the reproductive system that you're in. So you can be a person who identifies as a woman but not necessarily have a female reproductive system and still experience the issues that some women face, just as a person who identifies as a man who doesn't have male reproductive system can still face certain issues that men face. It really isn't a monolith, or rather, the personal experiences which someone personally experiences within identifying with a certain gender. It's all applicable to anybody, but I do want to separate those experiences for the sake of people deciding and choosing on where they want to personally identify with and where they want to feel comfortable in understanding the information that is going to be presented to them. The stresses of women bodies and how women bodies are supposed to look really does mess up a lot of us in a lot of different ways. And whether it's body type, the privileges and disadvantages of how we look, how our body looks, and how we feel about ourselves, to hypersexualization, shaming, judgment, and hormonal issues that women face just by simply existing. Like when we talk about body types, the fluctuation of what is considered attractive really has changed so much within the last century. And it really does show that doesn't really matter how you look. All that matters is somebody is going to like the fact that you look like that. Like there's so much hurrah about slim, thick women, thick women, slim women, big women, every type of woman. And it kind of just proves that as long as you exist, and as long as you like yourself and you're confident, someone's going to like you. And that person that likes you should mainly be you and shouldn't entirely be dependent on whether someone is looking at you or not. But that's not the way our minds work. And that's not the way socialization of humanity has worked. Because to a certain degree, approval and acceptance is the biomakers of why body dysmorphia is exacerbated within this gender, especially when it comes to individuals that might not have been born female or born naturally a woman to whatever standards that is. And it's made it harder for people just to simply be accepted as the individuals that they are. And the privileges and the disadvantages that women face by simply existing is the fact of pretty privilege, and how pretty privilege is the hallmark of why some people are going to the table to get work done, because we know that beauty is survival, and that certain types of people with certain types of looks are the very reason why some of us find it harder to live, because simply looking a certain way makes our lives so much easier, like so much easier. And you can't really blame people for feeling uncomfortable with how they've naturally came to be, because society has told a lot of us that our appearance is just not good enough. And because it's not good enough, we don't deserve attention. But the issue in even being connected to what other people say is that those are not even the right people you should be surrounding yourself around. Like, society needs to be blocked to a certain degree. And we should not internalize the things that people are projecting to us, because they're simply just projecting their own insecurities onto you. And also, what people say about you can only hurt you if you have said that about yourself. And getting to the root of those feelings about yourself and those triggers comes down to why you even feel that way in the first place. Another thing too about female presenting bodies, or just bodies that are presenting as a woman, is that the hypersexualization of us, and why people even feel the need to justify just seeing us as sexual objects. The whole concept of the Jezebel is funny and hilarious, because how can we even be mad at women for sexualizing ourselves when society has made us seem to only be good for because of our beauty or because of our bodies? It doesn't even make sense. And when women even take advantage of that fact, then we are the problem and we are the issue. When the problem and the issue is we are not being humanized, we are being dehumanized. And dehumanizing people doesn't make that group of people even want to adhere to their personhood when it comes to attaching it to you, which is the male, which is the patriarchal system, which makes women want to combat and fight when we all just really want to unionize with one another. And another thing too is hormonal issues. And it doesn't really matter whether you are or identify as a woman with a female reproductive system or a woman without a female reproductive system. Hormonal issues are the biomarkers of whether we feel comfortable in being who we are. Like, the fact that bloating takes up majority of our cycles, and the fact that acne and all these issues when it comes to our uterus or lack of uterus makes us feel even more worse about ourselves because of the cycle, because of all these other extra stuff that go on in our lives to make us even feel worser about how we identify as or how we feel about ourselves, because there's just a whole lot going on with us hormonally that a lot of people with male reproductive systems don't feel unless they go through a hormonal change. And that alone makes it even more harder for us just to simply accept our bodies and selves, because hormonal issues really do fluctuate our bodies, fluctuate our appearances, and do so many drastic things to our bodies that we don't personally choose. We don't necessarily choose our bodies in any way, shape, or form. And it makes it far more harder for us to simply just accept us when our bodies are just going hammer time when it comes to bloating on that day when you want to wear those nice-ass jeans and a crop top, but you look 3 months pregnant. Like, it's wild what the body can do for you and to you. Moving on forward to male-identifying beings. Regardless of whether you have a male reproductive system or not, all you have to do is identify, really, just to hear this information. So, the main issue within patriarchy and the issue with men even accepting themselves is the fact that there's a lack of representation of real bodies. And when I say real bodies, I mean bodies that are not fit or bodies that are simply just existing as they are. And that's my main issue, or I should say the main issue in general when it comes to men feeling comfortable and just simply being. Although a lot of men are just allowed to be whatever the fuck they want to be, a lot of them don't feel comfortable in that reality. And that's partly because there's this notion that the man is supposed to be this or the man is supposed to be that. And you could fit in whatever lines you need to fit in within that quote, because I don't know what it is to be a man. I don't identify as a man, but I do know men understand exactly what I'm saying right now. And the main thing with that is there's not a lot of body types being celebrated or represented within that community of people. And thus, aggression of all sorts are being pushed out and projected onto people who are simply innocent bystanders who want to understand what these group of people feel. And I simply do understand men, and I do understand why there's a lot of ill feelings when it comes to their body and their appearance. Like, there's so much there. And a lot of the times, men are not allowed to just simply say what it is and say the truth of how they see themselves, because they're always supposed to give off a character, a persona, that everything is good and everything will be taken care of. But if you're always presenting that everything will be taken care of, and the thing that needs to be taken care of is you, and it doesn't seem like that's ever coming to an end, it seems like you are just going to project everything that you feel onto other people. Men are very good at privatizing and internalizing their insecurities. And they do so by just going and doing what they need to do and making it seem like you are the issue, when how they feel about themselves is being shown in who they pick as partners, and also is being shown in how they even speak about themselves, speak about the things that they do, and speak from a place of negativity when it comes to everything, including themselves. Body dysmorphia within men can be shown in so many different ways. And in those same ways, those ways are related to women and related to how women act and related to how women feel too. So there isn't really a monolith between man and woman, but rather, why are we all feeling the same things, but one group of people are allowed to speak more about it, while the other are just supposed to accept the circumstances of how their being or how their human body is supposed to look. I don't think it's fair. And I don't think it's fair that men are allowed to push women to the extent of plastic surgery. Meanwhile, men are just allowed to simply exist in the grossness that some of them are. Like, that's not fair. And that's kind of the main issues that lie within body dysmorphia. Because it's not simply just about you. It's about the things that people have told you and the things that you have internalized as a personal issue, when there's absolutely nothing wrong with anybody. There's nothing wrong with your appearance. There's nothing wrong with your legs. There's nothing wrong with your ass. There's nothing wrong with the fact that you have flabs. There's nothing wrong with the fact that your arms are skinny. There's nothing wrong with our bodies. It's how we feel about ourselves that's the issue, and where that is stemming from that is a concern here. Now we're going to get into the fun part of the podcast, which is social media's impact in how we view our bodies. And this simply just stems from the issue of social comparison and the social hierarchy that we have within the society. And social comparison just means that we are comparing ourselves based on the outer appearance of others, the outer appearance of ourselves, what the other person is wearing, what we are wearing, and how we are comparing the visual aspects of what we simply can see, and basically thinking whether we're better than them or worse off than them. And when we imagine this pyramid, we can imagine it within this example that I'm going to illustrate right now. When we are in university, or whether we are in school, we tend to view people from the standpoint of whether they are A-plus students or whether there are those people that never show up to class, delinquents, and not as smart as we want to be. And we can waver between thinking we are average or thinking we're at the top or thinking we're at the bottom. If you think you are at the top, based on the grades, based on your attendance, and based on the teacher recommendations that you get within that year, you are going to see everything that other people do from a place of wanting to advance yourself, which is called self-enhancement. And if you're already at the bottom or think you're worse off than the people at the top, you are hoping to view things from a place of wanting to do better, which is hoping they could reach there. And you are hoping to advance yourself. This pyramid can be applied to so many different scenarios in our everyday lives of whether we think we're better off than people or whether we think that we can do better for ourselves, for our careers, and for our lives. And this is just what we do as humans. We're either sizing up or hoping that we never ever in our entire lives have to size down. We're always chasing after the hope and the potential to never be average. That's just our inner desire. We don't want to be average people. No one does. And the issue with that, when it comes to social media, is that we're only ever posting up the 1% of our lives that we want to show. And those are just our highlight reels. Highlight reel just means that out of the 20 pictures you've taken, you're most likely going to pick the picture that shows the best angle, best lighting, best smile, best background, and you are going to do so because that is the best representation of you in that moment. Why would you pick all the goofy pictures that just don't seem to show you in the best light that you can be shown. We all want to look a particular way all the time. And when we are on social media posting up the 1% of our lives, we aren't necessarily comparing what we're posting to what we see others posting, but rather we're comparing the 99% of our lives that no one else sees, sitting in bed, eating fucking chips on Netflix, and we're scrolling through Instagram, looking at everybody's 1% that they're showing us, and we are feeling shitty about what we see because we aren't doing what's the 1% we're showing others at all times. Because if we were, do you think we would have the time to be feeling down about what we see about others? No. That's a simple answer. No, we would not be. But that's not the point I'm trying to make here. The point is, the more time we spend on social media, it's the more time we are alternating and augmenting our realities within this planet and within this lifetime. The more we spend there, the more we aren't really seeing what we're doing, the more we're overlooking our accomplishments, and the more we're simply just not being happy about the circumstances that we're in because we are comparing that to the 1% we see other people's posting. When we know deep down, they're not like that 100% of the time. So why are you feeling bad? The issue with social media as a whole is the comparison issue. Comparison is the thief of joy. Comparison is the thief of joy. And that has been a saying for so long. All my life I've heard that saying, and it's very true. And when we relate that to the fact that we're only ever really experiencing life through the lens of social media, we are filtering our eyes. We are filtering our eyes to believe that what we're seeing is part of our reality too. All those people you see buying cars, buying houses, traveling everywhere, you think all these people whom you do not even know personally are simply living better, doing better, feeling better than you are because your mind is not in your life, it's in your phone. And when you focus so much on what is not even real, it becomes real to you. That's just the simple truth of it all. Social media literally is an alternate universe. An alternate universe that we know to be very deceptive when it comes to how we perceive ourselves. And the byproduct of overusing this has shown to be detrimental in how we perceive real from fake. A study has been done where women had to sort out images from whether they believed the woman was alternating her face or augmenting her face through Photoshop and Facetune from women who were naturally like that. And the study has shown that a lot of women were incapable of sorting out women who were naturally like that from women who were changing up their pictures. And these women simply could not believe that there are people that naturally look a certain way because of the adaptation to wanting to alternate and make ourselves look different than what we naturally would look like in a picture. And that goes to show that when you overuse something, especially social media, and overuse it and not understand the simple fact that we are all using it as a tool to brand ourselves and a tool to show the best highlights of ourselves for the reasons of socializing and developing who we are, developing our brand, developing whatever we want to come true in our lives. That's kind of the purpose of it, to socialize. And not understand that the socializing aspect of it is not to compare yourself, is not to see people as better or worse off than you, but rather just see what you see and not think deeper than what is seen. And that aspect of social media is very detrimental to us because we aren't capable of seeing our lives as simply our lives and their lives as simply as theirs. And notice that it doesn't even matter what we see. What matters is what we feel when we feel like we are not seeing the truth. How do you feel when you know the truth about someone? And do you feel more relatable to them? Or do you feel like, damn, I thought they were better than that? More oftentimes than not, we think of both. Because we believe that people should either hold their persona to be true or be exactly what you thought they were from the jump, so you don't feel bad when you find out the truth. It's really weird. Social media makes us want to feel that people are worse off than what they are, but when we find out that they're worse off than what we are, we lose respect for them. And we shouldn't be going online with that attitude. We should simply just be going online because we want to share ourselves, not alter ourselves or pretend to be somebody we're not. What I am saying that we should do when we are actively using social media is that we should remove the focus from them and point it back to us. Make ourselves be the point of comparison rather than looking at what people have and feeling worse than where we are, because what does that do for anybody? Nobody wants to know that they are the reason why you feel worse about yourself. We should all look at people and what they have and feel happy for them, because simply they have gotten what they deserve at that moment, and you are in a place where you deserve exactly what you have right now too. But that doesn't mean that you're always going to be where you are. So rather than beating yourself up for feeling jealous or comparing yourself to where someone else is at, you could find the root of the problem by understanding the subconscious reason as to why you're doing so, and also to limit and buffer your experience online so you can simply engage with others without feeling envy, rage, jealousy over things that simply do not even matter in that realm. Nothing matters online because what we put there is everything we have been experiencing as humans. So why would you let something online that's impersonal hinder your personal life? Why would you let that be a thing? It doesn't need to even be a thing. If you thought I was going to speak negatively about the reality of things, but not give anybody a mode of changing, correcting, and improving behavior, then you do not know me. But the next part of the podcast is how to love our bodies. You cannot address an issue without ever giving people a solution, because what's the point of pointing it out but letting people not feel better or do better for themselves? But the points that I have here is the one thing that we need to understand in this human life is that our bodies are fluctuating with the changes that are going on in our external lives, as well as the changes that are going on within our bodies. So whatever waves that come at us and hit our shores shouldn't impact how we view ourselves, because the main purpose of this body is to keep you alive. And you should be happy, even proud, that you have gotten this far, that you have this body that is here to protect you and your soul and the experience that you are meant to have in this life. And simply understanding that we are not here to have or hold judgments towards our physical appearance, because it simply does not matter. It is here just to get you on your next journey in this life, in this consciousness. You simply do not have to feel a way about the way your body looks, because it kept you here. It kept you sane. It kept you experiencing the life that you need to experience. Another thing that we need to do is that we need to start embracing our differences, embracing our individuality. We should not be looking at others as a mode to being a part of ourselves that we are simply hiding because we need somebody to bring it out of us. No one needs to bring anything out of you that you don't naturally feel. If you know a hidden talent within yourself, if you know the one thing that makes you different from others, why are you keeping it within yourself? Why are you feeling weird about how your face looks, how your body looks, when all you need to do is embrace it to feel better? What's the point of doing all of that? What's the point of feeling like you're worse off than somebody else because of how you look? There is no point in doing all of it. It's a waste of time. Feeling bad about yourself is a waste of time because you're not here to do that. You're not here to feel inferior or superior to other people. You are here to see everybody as your equal. And that starts with embracing what makes you different from other people. What makes you you? And why you should embrace that. You should know better than anybody what it is about you that makes you different, and also what makes you attractive, because simply being you is attractive. How can anybody deny that fact? Another thing that we need to do is understand that being you is as good as somebody else being them. Simple. Being you is as good as somebody else being them. Because even in division, there is unity. And understanding what we're good at, what we're not good at, and what other people are good at, as well as what they're not good at, makes us a pact to move on for the better because we know our differences and we also know our strengths. That is a powerful thing. And when it comes to tackling body dysmorphia, the only way we could tackle it is by accepting the place of where these insecurities truly have come from, where they stem from, and also why as a collective we need to stop projecting our insecurities on other people and projecting an ideal that's not even real. Ideals aren't real. They are the exact representation of what we deem perfect within our minds. Our minds are our reality, and if you change the way your mind works and how your mind looks at beauty and how your mind feels about beauty, then you'll be able to accept you. Because outside of whether somebody finds you attractive or not, you simply have to care enough about yourself to still be here. And that's all you need, is to feel good about you, be ready to accept you, be around other people that accept you, be around environments which protect your identity and allow you to flourish. That's the truth of it all. That's the part of us that we need to accept, the part of us that is just us.